This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to Saxo's Market Call on Tuesday, July 6, 2021. Yesterday, we had a rally in Nasdaq 100 futures to a new all-time high. We had it coincided with a slide and a breakdown lower in the U.S. 10-year yield. Everything is just happy and dandy in U.S. technology stocks. Which was a little bit interesting about the move yesterday was that as you can see on slide two, a little insert there on our theme baskets, the mega caps, the bubble stocks, e-commerce, and next-gen medicine were actually declining. So that tells you that it was a pretty broad-based rally you had in U.S. technology stocks yesterday. So that's, I think, is actually a little bit of an encouraging sign there. Although we still have this overall question over, where is the economy? Where is the inflation going from here? And we won't be much wiser until a couple of months' time from now. So in the meantime, I still think that growth is somewhat still in a positive driver's seat. Although if you sorted our theme baskets on the month-to-date performance, you will see already signs of a little bit of reversal of last month's big rally for growth stocks and a slowdown in the inflation trades with, this month already the commodity sector basket is coming back together with travel, et cetera. And staying with the commodity, the OPEC Plus meeting, that was a big show. And there's a lot of tensions and fight over how much to raise production, basically. Can you take us through what's happening here and what's the direction potentially for oil?
Well, I can try, Peter. Yes, we did after a meeting that started on Thursday and then never materialized yesterday because the group basically failed to find common ground. So what we're left with right now is basically no change in terms of production levels. That basically means no additional barrels reaching the market from August and onwards. Barrels that the market almost desperately needs at this stage because we got OPEC Plus keeping supplies tight at a time where demand is rising. So I put in here on slide three, according to calculations made by Morgan Stanley, they see the market currently undersupplied by around 2 million barrels a day, and with demand growth expected to rise by another 3 million barrels a day during the second half, clearly we are heading towards a very undersupplied market if we don't get a response from OPEC Plus sooner or later. Because really the essence of this and what we've seen during these past 6 months is the lack of action from non-OPEC Plus producers, especially in the U.S. And again, it is highlighting this conundrum we have right now that investors, they want to look towards a decarbonized world. But before we get to that scenario, we are still in need of oil companies still getting oil out of the ground to keep the wheels running. And that is really what potentially we are facing as a challenge. So what can happen next? I think, first of all, just thinking logically, ruining what they have built up over the past year just simply doesn't make any sense. So walking away from breaking down of the OPEC Plus group just doesn't seem like a solution. So because it could basically lead to another pump and dump price war, which we just experienced last March, initiated by Saudi Arabia in response to Russians' unwillingness to cut production. So I'm still waiting. I'm still looking for some kind of a compromise that will help stabilize the price. But obviously, if we don't find a compromise and the UAE stays in the group, and then we could see this $100 risk once again resurfacing. And it's just obviously just adding to the inflationary pressures that's already so far been one of the drivers for some of the market action we've seen so far today. We're seeing gold back above 1800, but we can talk about that a bit later. So I think in the short term, the market will stay supported. I think there will be increased pressure from big consumers like China and India, and probably also increasing discontent in Washington with these prices. I would think that we will find some kind of a compromise, which potentially could prevent at least Brent in the short term to break much above $80. But it's a fluid situation, so let's stay focused on that one.
Great stuff, Ole. Just quickly before I turn to you, Altair, I just want to quickly mention that we had an RBA meeting overnight, and basically the Australian Central Bank there has basically indicating it starts on a path to wind back its emergency stimulus. And seeing the Aussie dollar there on slide five is strengthening. So it's now a 3-day comeback. It's really creeping back to some crawling back to some very key levels there. So basically going to change the pace of the tapering. So they're going to reduce that once the current $5 billion a week quantitative easing program ends in September. It will go down to $4 billion, and then they will do a new review in mid-November. And they opted against rolling over their peg on the yield for their 3-year yield target there. So things are slowly changing around the world in at different central banks. And that actually leads to your area, Althea, because in fixed income land, we have still a dovish ECB, despite some more central banks are becoming more hawkish. And we had a very weak German factory order this morning. So on slide six, you're talking about European yields.
Yes, absolutely, Peter. So what's happening here in the euro area is that we might see in the short term yield falling before they resume their rise. As we mentioned before in other calls, to see yields rising, we would need to see US Treasury yields rising in the US, and also the big change will come with the German elections. However, today, this morning, we had the German factory orders surprising on the downside. They came out at minus 3.7% versus 0.9% forecasted. So what does that mean is that the market might expect that the ECB to keep dovish for longer, and that might be that we see bond yields breaking below their support line and minus 0.25% in the short term, finding support next at minus 0.4%. But it doesn't mean that we would not see yields resuming their rise towards 1% as soon as we have US Treasuries rising again. Another key event for European sovereigns this week, Peter, is going to be the ECB strategy review. Basically, it has been announced that following this review, there is going to be an announcement, and it's going to be very relevant to see what the central bank is going to cover, because it looks likely that one of the topics is going to be about their inflation target. Right now, the ECB is one of the few developed central banks. It will be interesting to see if they are going to find a more dovish framework where it can stay accommodative for longer, despite we see inflation rising in the short term.
If I can add a couple of comments just as well, because just the two subjects we just talked about, if you look at the dollar overnight, it is trading a tad softer, and it is actually Aussie and Kiwi dollar that's leading from the front there, but even the euro dollar is ticking higher, moving up towards that 119 level. But I think also on the German factory orders, I think once again this supply chain problems, Peter, is coming into play. We've seen how some of these car manufacturers, because quite a bit of the drop was driven by a slump in car sales, so it is these supply chain problems that continues to weigh on some of these German companies, and again it's acting as a potential driver for higher prices.
Yeah, so the global supply chain situation is actually worsening. It has been worsening for the past 3 months. I saw some charts the other day that it has actually been accelerating to the worst. At the same time, despite a huge demand coming from the developed world, in China, you're actually seeing a slowdown recently in some of the PMI figures, and I think that as well is also spilling into the German factory orders. We know Germany has a very large export engine into China. But staying with Europe and shifting gear a little bit and going back to you, Ole, we have to cover what's going on, and I know you probably already did it yesterday, and you did it in your weekly update on Friday. But this natural gas situation is really really turning into be an interesting story and something you have to watch if you're watching inflation, because we have been talking a lot about inflation for so long here in our team, and the jury's still out how sticky it will be, but the energy prices is definitely, together with the green transformation and the rising carbon emission prices, this is the key story, Ole. And your slide deck here on slide 8 looks quite terrible if you use natural gas like me.
Yeah, exactly. On slide 8, as I said, I'm just basically highlighting, just saying that energy inflation in Europe is gathering pace, and it's driven by this phenomenal rally we've seen in gas prices. Again, you probably don't, as a consumer, think too much about gas prices, because quite often they're heavily taxed, and gas is just flowing any time. But right now it's flowing not at the pace that we would like to see. Several reasons which we have talked about and highlighted in recent updates, as you mentioned, Peter. We have stock levels, as you can see here on slide 8, well below the 5-year average. This is following a cold winter. We have above to average temperatures right now in the southern parts of Europe. We have Gazprom last week signaling they're not interested in increasing supplies through the Ukrainian pipeline system, again leading to some speculation that we have got geopolitics involved in this rally at the same time. But also we got LNG. LNG was really looked as the way that Europe could wean itself off its independence of Russian gas. But the LNG right now is not flowing to Europe, but to Asia, because prices in Asia are even higher due to also heat waves and very high demand in Asia as the economic recovery can gather pace following the pandemic. So all of this, higher gas prices, lower gas supply, what does that trigger? Higher demand for coal, because these utility plants they need to keep running, and if the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing, then you have to look for coal. What happens when you burn more coal? You have to buy more carbon emissions. Carbon emissions is trading at a record high, just here below 60 euros a ton. All of this translates into your gas bill, Peter, and everyone else's gas bills, and also not only private consumers but obviously also the industry relying on energy consumption. On top of that, obviously, the oil rally we've seen now since yesterday, adding to the cost of gasoline as well. So it is just one that it's just firing on all cylinders right now, and it's difficult to see what at least here in the short term could pause it.
Yeah, and as we've been highlighting on this podcast, but also in some of our research note recently, you know, this overall situation we have in the world, which has been supercharged by all the stimulus and the demand coming from, you know, also the digital world, e-commerce, etc., it's causing these global supply chain issues, but it's also creating these issues in the fiscal world and commodities and energy, where, you know, capital expenditures have been plunging by 65% over the past 9 years, as we have been highlighting, and it's an ugly mix. And I have a little bit hard time when you read some of these market participants that are really believing in that we'll just go back to low inflation rates. I get the demographics, I get the technology, I get all these arguments, but at the same time, when you see how the commodity markets are responding in these days, I don't find their arguments that compelling, and at least not here in the short term. I'll tell you, we need to get back to you, because another big story, there's a lot of action in the market, actually, not only in equities and commodities, but also this the Fed's reverse repo facility, which is gathering a lot of attention. I think you should try to take the listeners through this. It can be a little bit complicated, but I hope you can tell the easy story here of what's going on.
Well, I will try, Peter, but I think that what's happening with US treasuries at the moment is that there is going to be a lot of pressure on the yield curve during summer. And I want to take you to slide 7. On the left, I put a chart of the yield curve. In green is where it is now compared to where it was before the latest FOMC meeting last June. And what you can see is that the yield curve flattened slightly. However, I tried to indicate what are those elements that can keep on pushing yields lower in the front part of the yield curve, and what can move yields higher on on the long term and also on the long part of the yield curve. Just in front of us in August, we are going to have three key elements that are going to compress yields, which is excess liquidity in money market, which we see that in the reverse repo facility because it continues to increase. Well, it has decreased since quarterly end last week, but still it remains, the volumes remains very high. Then we have the Treasury General Account. Basically, the Treasury wants to reduce the TGA, which means that it's going to put more money into the system, and that cash needs to find a home. So there is more money trying to chase for assets. And also another topic that is becoming quite relevant is the debt ceiling suspension. So from 2019 until today, there has been a suspension of the debt ceiling. If that were to be reintroduced, it means that the US Treasury's Treasury will need to reduce the T-bill issuance. So still, we have even less assets that this huge amount of money is able to chase. And all these elements are going to compress yields. However, the interesting point here that has been risen by Zoltan, which is a Credit Suisse strategist for money market. It's basically the money market guru. And what he's saying is that even though we see all that amount of liquidity in the short term, so we are talking about August, July and August, well, the reverse repo facility should be able with their 5 basis points to suck all this money up. And he's forecasting that the reverse repo facility is going to climb, to rise up to 1.3 billion by August. So we have seen a peak by last week with the quarterly end there, close to 1 trillion. He sees basically even a higher number out there. But I think that at this point, investors should focus on the real message that the treasury market is sending right now. Liquidity is too much. There is distortions going on with the yield curve, especially on the front part of the yield curve. And the only way that the Federal Reserve can tackle this is by tapering aggressively. So I believe that already with Jackson Hole, we are going to see a more aggressive Fed, and it will need to taper faster and more than what market was expected, which means that we might see more bear flattening of the yield curve. So meaning that the short part of the of yields should rise faster than long-term yields. And then as we head towards autumn, and we understand that inflation might not be transitory, then the whole yield curve should shift higher as well. So just watch out in the next month for these three elements and how money market is doing, because it's going to be key for the Federal Reserve monetary policies going ahead of us.
Right, thank you, Althea. In terms of, before we go to the macro calendar on a single single stocks news, we have Ocado publishing their first half result this morning in London, and they're beating on their retail operations. So they're running this online supermarket. It's the best pure play in the one of the only pure plays in the world public equity markets. But they're disappointing a little bit on their technology side of their business. So they have their own online grocery business, but then they also have become quite experts in creating these automated fulfillment centers on groceries, and they're selling this technology in partnership with other retailers around the world. So it's and they have said that that is their long term strategy, is to for that part of the business to be the most dominant in terms of profits. And they just announced this this morning that they have gained a new partnership in Spain with El Campo, and they will build out a new massive fulfillment center outside Madrid for their robotic warehouse services. And but overall, they're pretty much in line on the top line growth, and they beat a little bit on the operating profits driven by this retail side of the business. So actually a quite decent result from Ocado. And if we go to the if you go to the calendar,
Peter,
yeah.
Just before we get there, can I just have a just a quick comment? Because just while we've been recording this podcast, we've seen the WTI crude break that line I put in on slide three, the 76.90. So we're now trading at the highest levels since November 2014. And I think I just want to highlight this, the potential focus on the reflation of trade returning. I think we are seeing that already unfolding in both copper and gold. On slide on nine, we can see gold has broken above that 17.95 level, really in order for additional short covering to start to trigger further advances. We need to break above 1814, so that would be my focus today. And also, if you can, if you take a look at the copper, we've had this month-long correction, which seems to be which seems to have grinded to a halt, and we've actually had quite a decent response to the upside now for the past past couple of days. So basically, rising energy cost translating into rising inflation focus, rising translating into some of these reflation trades starting to see renewed demand.
All right, and moving to the calendar, there's only three important items today. So at 0900 GMT, we have the Germany's July ZEW survey, typically a market mover, at least for equities. So we'll be watching that. And then at 1345 and 1400, we'll have June PMIs for the services sector and the composite index for the US. Obviously important to get an idea of how strong the US economy was back in June. And I think that concludes today's a little bit longer than normal Saxo Market Call, but I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back same time and place tomorrow. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.